Hello and welcome to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. I'm Jenny Rentis. Later in the show, I'll be joined by teammate Kalen Kaler, and together we'll review a full Sunday of Week 6 action, which started at 9:30 a.m. with the Panthers and Bucks in London. But first, we'll start 8 time zones away in Southern California, where the Chargers fell 2-4 with a disappointing 24-17 loss to a Steelers team starting its third-string quarterback. Undrafted rookie Devlin Hodges did what he needed to do in his first NFL start, while the offense leaned on running backs James Conner and Benny Snell. And it was linebacker Devin Bush who really sparked the Steelers' effort by forcing turnovers on back-to-back drives in the first quarter, scoring on one, setting the tone for a defense that shut out Phillip Rivers and company for 3 full quarters. For the Steelers, without Ben Roethlisberger for the season, and with backup Mason Rudolph also sidelined, this was an unexpected bonus win. For Los Angeles this season, however, the result was a grim one. Last year, a night game against the Steelers was when the Chargers established themselves as one of the top teams in the AFC, en route to a 12-4 season. This year's game was the opposite kind of beacon, a sign that this roster, in its current shape, might not be very good. Rivers was rushed all night long, the Chargers' offensive line unable to hold up to pressure or get any push in the run game. The Chargers mustered just 32 rushing yards and a woeful average of 2.3 yards per carry. Left tackle Russell Okung has been sidelined since the summer with a medical issue, and center Mike Pouncey went on IR this week because of a neck injury that required surgery. But during NBC's Sunday Night Football broadcast, Chris Collinsworth pointed out that the Chargers' woes up front go beyond just injuries, noting that they don't spend enough capital on that position, referring to the offensive line, specifically the tackle spots. The result was what we saw Sunday night, Rivers besieged, flinging a pass behind Melvin Gordon that Bush scooped and scored for the Steelers' first touchdown, also other times awkwardly chucking the ball out. Pouncey was the latest blow in a roster that was already missing Okung, Derwin James, and Adrian Phillips, but perhaps the team's success of last season had us overlooking critical deficiencies in both the depth and talent of the rosters. The Chargers also ranked next to last in cash payroll in 2019, ahead of only the tanking Miami Dolphins. That's some of the capital that Collinsworth indicated they are not spending, which is at odds with having a 37-year-old quarterback in his 16th season. The Chargers mustered a comeback Sunday night, but they ran out of time. They are at risk for that being the case for their season and also for their franchise quarterback. And next, we'll be right back with Kalen Kaler. I'm now joined by Kalen Kaler. This is both of our Monday morning NFL podcast debuts. Welcome, Kalen.
Hello, JV. I'm in Chicago. So hello from Chicago, everybody. And happy belated birthday to Jenny, who recently had a birthday this weekend.
Thank you. I'm now in my late 30s.
It's such a milestone.
It really is.
She's happy to be there. She's very happy about it.
Well, thank you, Kalen. It's also kind of a milestone in the NFL season, or you know, we're 6 weeks in at least, and we're starting to get a feel for who's real and who's not. I think that was the theme of this Sunday. So I wanted to start with two of the biggest statement wins, one in each conference. First, we'll go with the NFC. The 49ers beat the Rams 20-7. I think it really, we're wondering now, are the 49ers the best team in the NFC? Which, to be honest, was not something that I thought entering this season we would be asking
at
this juncture.
Not at all.
They held the Rams to 165 yards of total offense while the 49ers amassed 331 yards. I'm sure everyone has seen the stat line on Jared Goff. He was 13 of 24 for 78 yards with no touchdowns and no interceptions. And yeah, I didn't have this high expectations for the 49ers. You know, Garoppolo was coming off the ACL tear. I didn't think they'd be the class of the NFC, but in this game, they really looked like it. I felt like they'd been building credibility, but they still had a soft early schedule. This Rams win, I feel like, was the benchmark win they really needed to sort of convince us. It was in LA. The 49ers were on a short week, while the Rams had 10 days since their last game.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think this was a huge benchmark, like you said, for the 49ers just to prove who they really were. And, you know, they're undefeated, which is huge in today's NFL at this point in the season. And I think for the Rams, too, I mean, this was their third straight loss. So that means something as well. And, you know, that's something this team under Sean McVay is not really used to seeing. They've just been successful and have been able to string together wins for a while. So I thought it was really surprising. And obviously it was sort of a battle between the 49ers vaunted pass rush. You know, they've got one of the better defensive lines in the NFL this year. So it sort of came down to that was the matchup that I was really paying attention to, is sort of their defensive line against the Rams' weakened offensive line. And you even saw one of their starters leave, Joseph Noteboom, one of their younger starters on the O-line for the Rams. He left the game with injury. So they're going to have even more shakeup with that line and adjusting there. So that's kind of something to watch with the Rams, I think. But definitely, it was definitely surprising. And I think the question, are they the best team in the NFC, is a really good one. And certainly not, like you said, certainly not what I thought we would be right now asking that question. And I think the way I would answer it is probably, but I also am keeping an eye on the Packers. That would be, for me, I think that would be the other team in the NFC that I'm thinking they could be the best team in the NFC right now, because it seems like with every game Green Bay, their offense gets better. And now this season, they have an opportunistic defense for the first time. So I think that would be, for me, the other team I would throw out there in the mix of like the class of the NFC. I don't know. What are you thinking?
I would say the Saints and the Seahawks would be the other two that I, you know, would probably be in that conversation as well. I think what we're seeing now with the 49ers, and you really hit on the key matchup in that game. In a lot of ways, this was a really bad matchup for the Rams because their line has really struggled through the early part of the season. And the 49ers turned their defensive line from a weakness into one of its greatest strengths. You know, five former first-round draft picks, Nick Bosa, D. Ford, DeForest Buckner, Eric Armstead, Solomon Thomas on the defensive line. And just saw the way that defensive coordinator Robert Saleh was celebrating after all of these big plays. I mean, that's really been a big part of this team's identity. And just also seeing the vision of the 49ers come together. You know, when Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch were both hired, they got five-year twin contracts, with the expectation being there would be a pretty significant rebuild. And while we didn't talk about it in the sense of like tanking, they really did undergo a pretty significant one. And I think we're sort of seeing them come out on the other side now.
Yeah, and I think you mentioned there's so many first round picks on that defensive line. And I think when I saw Solomon Thomas's sack today, it kind of stood out to me because I think he was a 2017 draft pick, I think, in the first round for them. And, you know, he's kind of a rotational player for them. Like, he only sees, you know, maybe like 30% of their defensive snaps a game around that. And, you know, to see him being used in that way, where if he were on another team in the league, you know, he may be like a, you know, full-time starter. That just kind of shows you like the depth of talent that they have on that defensive line and you know, how stacked they are in that position, I think.
And now we wonder with the Rams, where do they go from here? You know, they went into this game, they obviously, Todd Gurley was out, Aqib Talib was out, Clay Matthews was out, all sidelined with injuries. So they'll get some of those guys back. We mentioned that this was probably a bad matchup with the Lions. But I think one of the central questions is Goff. He's really struggled this season, 7 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. The offense hasn't had the magic last year. And there's so many reasons why, you know, Gurley hasn't been the same you know, dominant back that he was last year. But can McVay, his biggest challenge, I think, is channeling some of that magic Goff had last year. And it's an interesting, they're in an interesting spot because they really are tied to him long term. If they were to cut Goff after this season, more than $50 million in dead cap. So, you know, we saw when McVay came in, he took the quarterback that was there and he turned him into a guy that could win games for him. And I think his challenge now is, can, you know, now that a lot of their playbook is out there, can he still bring that same player out? And really, I think their season depends on that.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think if you were to sum up the rest of their season, I think that's basically what it boils down to. Because that was a good point. Like, they are tied to Goff for a while. And they did that, I think, didn't they just do that deal with him recently before this season? Which seemed smart at the time because they were sort of, you know, getting him long term without having to do like that major, major, you know, quarterback setting, highest paid player ever sort of contract. So it seemed smart at the time, but it's true. It's like that's the challenge that they have. And maybe in a couple of years, they're going to look back at that and think, okay, maybe that wasn't actually like the smartest move that we could have done at the time. But I think McVay, I believe he can do it. I think it's just going to challenge him probably in a way that he hasn't experienced before, because I feel like he thought he had solved it. You know, last year it seemed like they were doing great and it seemed like he'd figured it out. But I think it's going to be a new challenge, maybe like every season with Goff in a way.
Yeah.
One that sort of evolves as they play more games.
And that division's going to be fascinating to see how it unfolds with all of the, you know, with the Seahawks, the Rams, and the 49ers all, you know, at the top of or contending for the top spot there. So,
yeah.
And the Seahawks,
who had the greatest celebration of all time today.
Yes, we will get to that. I have it in the notes, Kaylin. I have a little ad that Kaylin is going to mention this great touchdown celebration.
I won't get ahead of myself.
To the AFC. The other, I would say, you know, power shifting game happened in Kansas City. Texans 31-24 over the Chiefs. Deshaun Watson against the reigning MVP is making his MVP case this year. You know, one passing touchdown, two rushing touchdowns. They were down 17-3, surged back. They had that long game-winning drive in the fourth quarter, 12 plays, 103 yards, 8.5 minutes, and that was the go-ahead touchdown. Deshaun Watson rushing touchdown, and then he threw that two-point conversion to Hopkins after that. And he's been fantastic in the fourth quarter the last 2 weeks. I think he has one incompletion in the fourth quarter in the last two games.
Wow.
What did you think of what the Texans... I mean, we don't see the Chiefs... We don't expect the Chiefs to lose at Arrowhead a lot.
No, and now it's two in a row. So that's also wild. I think that was just probably as unexpected as, you know, what we just went over with the Rams. But yeah, I think Deshaun Watson is great. And, you know, I didn't see it today if he gave one of his educational responses and press conferences as he's been doing the last couple of weeks. But those have been so cool to see. And I think you would agree with this, like from just reporting experience, like when you get a player one-on-one, they will, and you ask them questions about their game, they'll go that in depth and they will kind of talk you through X's and O's. But in a press conference setting, it's like so much more rare that a player will open up and, you know, start using his hands to like be the safeties and the defense. And I just think it's so cool to like watch him really sort of open up in that way this year and show like how intelligent he is. You can tell just by the way he answers questions in that kind of press conference setting, like this is a quarterback who is really growing in his knowledge of the game and in his maturity and sort of confidence as an NFL starting quarterback. So, yeah, I mean, that was really impressive. And ESPN on their NFL Countdown show this morning had a cool feature sort of comparing Mahomes and Watson. And obviously they were the same draft class. I think they were two picks apart and both of their teams traded up to get them. And they both become, you know, the faces of their franchise and are both very talented young quarterbacks. And they were just comparing, they have very similar like stats. They had both won 17 regular season games. So they just had like a lot in common. And I think they were even born 3 days apart, which is even like weirder. But so I thought it was cool to see them. I mean, I know it's not true that quarterbacks aren't playing each other, obviously. And when they advertise quarterback matchups, you kind of roll your eyes because you're like, well, it's not the quarterbacks playing each other. Like they have nothing to do with each other in this game, but it was a fun game to watch because you did kind of feel like you were watching, you know, two of the next great stars that as we see quarterbacks playing for close to 20 years now, it's like they're going to be around for a while and they're going to be making the NFL fun and exciting to watch for a long time to come.
Yeah, it feels like, you know, the new Brady Manning. And
And
I was among the people that was somewhat critical of the Tunsil trade right before the season, just because of the amount of assets they had to give up to get. And they hadn't addressed the line. It was this last minute move. But it really is paying off. Watson has not been sacked the last 2 weeks. And so I feel like that's, you know, when you
that
bring
was
your,
worth it.
Yeah, bring a lineman.
It was so
in.
Worth it.
Yeah, and you bring a lineman in right before the season starts. I do think it takes a while for that chemistry. Everyone really has to be working in unison on in that unit more than any other on the football field. And so I think probably just took a little time to get everyone together, but we're really seeing the benefits of that. And I would
yeah,
so
it's a relief to see him not get beat up in the way that he was last season. You just, it's hard to watch after a while with some of these quarterbacks that you're just, you know, you just shake your head knowing if they had better protection, like what they would be capable of.
No, absolutely. And on the other side, you know, with the Chiefs, I think the biggest question right now is Mahomes' ankle. He injured it week one and he hasn't missed any practice time and he's been fine, at, you know, and he looks fine at times. But then there's other times, you know, you saw him, it got rolled up on last week and there was a play in the second quarter this week where he got McKinney from the Texans kind of fell on that leg and he kind of got up a little hobbly. And so you do wonder how healthy he is. And it's interesting. I mean, they have a short week this week and they have a late bye. It's not till week 12. So he doesn't have that week right now to just kind of take a little extra rest, and he's got to kind of push through until they get to that bye. So I think that's the kind of thing that with this offense and the way they use Mahomes, obviously we see his athleticism. He's rolling out, he's making throws from, you know, all corners of the field. I think that is something that really can affect the Chiefs.
I totally agree. And I think it's sort of like you mentioned, the buys and it isn't until late in the season. I think that's a dangerous situation, unfortunate schedule for them, because it's so helpful when you do have that break where you don't have to take time off, but you are able to just, you know, let it recover a little bit. Because I like you said, I noticed they pointed out that play where his left ankle got rolled up. And then you just kind of, you did notice a little bit, he was a little bit limited in terms of, you know, that side, and it does affect his game. And so, you know, I think it's just going to be a recurring theme, and I don't know how you protect that body part very well. I mean, especially with the game that he plays, and you don't want him to change, you know, you don't want him to change his game for sake of like saving his ankle for, you know, later in the season. But yeah, I think that's a valid concern, just because that body part too, I just feel like it can easily just get worse and worse. Instead of getting better.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be a storyline, I think, for the next few weeks for sure. All right, Kaylin, we will move on to the game that you are most interested in this week. The Seahawks beat the Browns 32-28. The Browns had a 20-6 lead in the first quarter and blew the lead. We'll start with the Seahawks because of this fantastic celebration. And Seahawks are 5-1 like they were in 2013. It's their Super Bowl year. And the similarity that reminded me a little bit was that 2013 season, they had a bunch of these big double digit road comebacks. Like this was. And that just that I don't know. A trait of that team really reminded me of this a little bit. Obviously, they're built very differently and they've gone through this whole makeover since then. But that specific trait of being able to come back from this kind of deficit reminded me of that. But during that comeback was when we got this fantastic celebration.
It was great. So there was four players, I believe, and they recreated the NSYNC Bye 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 dance that they did on tour and in their video, and was sort of like that iconic dance. I don't know how many of you listeners were boy band fans, probably not that many of you.
I mean, both of us were though, so we hopefully some of our listeners are.
And I was gonna say, Jenny and I fall on different sides of the NSYNC Backstreet Boy debate. I am in a team NSYNC and Jenny is on the other side of Backstreet Boys, so this is a contentious debate for us for a while, but I think the Seahawks picked the correct team to model their celebration after.
That was such a fun, you know, you see a lot of these celebrations have gotten a little bit repetitive, right? So it was fun to see something totally different. And that's how the Seahawks feel too, right? A lot of these faces are totally different, but then some of them are still the same, Wilson and Bobby Wagner and KJ Wright. And so it's a mix of old and new. And, you know, I think last year was a little surprising that they went to the playoffs. And this year, I think, hey, listen, Connor Orr picked them to go to the Super Bowl. So
yeah, he
our
did.
MMQB colleague, yes. Connor, was ahead of the curve on the Seahawks.
He's right on. Shout out to Connor. My favorite thing about the Seahawks right now is, besides that celebration, is DK Metcalf, because I just remember like writing about him and just reading about him and watching him in the draft process and kind of thinking, I mean, personally, I thought he was overhyped, and I thought, you know, when he went viral with that super athletic like muscle shot where he just looked insane, like it was just, I mean, everybody was like, holy crap, look at that guy. I just thought, you know, I thought he was overhyped because of, you know, his body type, and he didn't really have a ton of production in college because of his neck injury that he had in his last college season. So I thought he was probably overhyped and maybe a reach for where he was drafted. But, you know, he looks good, and he is playing a valuable role in their offense. So I am glad that, you know, he's proving my original opinion of him wrong.
Yeah, and they got, you know, he began to slide, and I think the Seahawks got pretty good value for him. On the flip side, we have the Browns, who are totally
Yikes.
In a bad spot.
Yikes.
2-4, the season that was supposed to have monstrous expectations, although I was wary of those expectations. I didn't think this would be mm-hmm. a playoff team, but now we really see them in it. They're really in a tough spot because they've got the bye, then they have the Patriots, and it just feels like this season is slipping away. Will there be major changes? I don't know. I mean, there are certainly calls that you can question. The dreaded goal line fade on the series yeah. where the, you know, the Seahawks have the goal line stand. You know, third down call. Who likes a goal line fade? I certainly don't
right.
like a goal line fade. I don't think most people like a goal line fade. You know, then the game-clinching interception, you know, 2nd and 15, going to Dontrell Hilliard. Ball goes through his hand. Wasn't a great throw either. Not great placement. And then, you know, the game's over then. So I don't know where the Browns go from here. I think that's a lot of going to be a lot of questioning of Freddie Kitchens, and hey, was he really the right person for this role? Was he ready? Should they make some kind of changes around him? You know, should they change the play calling? I'm not sure. What do you think, Kalen?
Yeah, I think especially with the challenge debacle in today's game, where you know there was a fumble in the end zone, and then it wasn't a fumble. And then, you know, the next play happens, and before, you know, just before the snaps, he throws the challenge flag when, you know, that probably, you know, that play would have worked. And then, you know, 10 minutes later, the whole replay thing goes through, and then he ends up, you know, wasting his challenge. It failed. And then later in the game, he wasn't able to challenge an actually questionable call by DK or catch by DK Metcalf on third down, which was crucial to the way that the rest of the game played out. So I think the questions about like some of his coaching decisions are very fair and sort of valid. And I think you're right. Like they're just going to accumulate as the season goes on. And I think even in the media, in his press conferences this past week, Jarvis Landry, brought up play calling like 6 different times during his availability, which is always a concerning thing when your own players are sort of bringing that up to the media publicly. You know, it just reminds me of like Aaron Rodgers doing that at the beginning of last season, calling out Mike McCarthy and the play calling, and just that, I mean, that spiraled out of control, and we saw where that ended. So it's sort of, I feel like when your own players start calling out the play calling, it's kind of like a red flag of like, this is on the verge of spiraling out of control and maybe becoming like a real issue within the team. Because once they're taking that to the media and taking it public, it's like, then you know it means something, because players in today's NFL are so private and guarded, and they like know how to talk to the media so as not to be controversial. So when that stuff is making it out, you kind of know, oh, it does mean something, and like they are talking about that. And like I think Jarvis brought that up specifically because of the way Odell Beckham had been used in the last few games. And I think that's actually the one bright side of this game for Browns fans, And the team, because in the previous two games before today, Beckham, I believe, had two catches in each game for like around 40 yards in each game. So he was totally limited and just, yeah, he's double teamed all the time, but it's Odell Beckham. So, you know, there's probably ways to figure out how to use him a lot better than they were. And so this game, I think he had 100 yards, five catches. So it was just a lot. We saw more of him. And I think that's the small bright side of this game for Browns fans, is that he's back being used, and hopefully they will continue to figure out how to use him the best way they can. But, you know, he's not the type of player who should be getting two catches a game. Like, that's not going to help your team.
Right. Yeah. And this is why head coaches hate when there's all this hype out there and all this talk about how talented the roster is, because if you have a talented roster and then you underachieve, the finger automatically goes to the coaching staff. Why aren't you getting more out of the talented roster?
Right.
And that's exactly the situation that the Browns with Freddie Kitchens are in. So, of course, it makes sense that the finger would be pointed at the young coach who people think should be, you know, leading the division with the players that he has.
Definitely.
So we'll move on to what I'm going to call the Cousins clapback game. Vikings, yes, beat the Eagles,
so
38-20. You know, there were the comments leading up to the game. Eagles linebacker Zach Brown, Cousins' former teammate in Washington, made some comments that he was the weak link. So Cousins goes out, passes for 333 yards and four touchdowns. The Vikings put it on their social media, make some joke about the weak link.
That was a great tweet.
Yeah, you know, just,
but
it's, you know,
in a few weeks, it's going to look stupid. Like, he's going to have a bad game, and that tweet is going to look awful.
It'll,
you know,
be screenshotted and spread around. It's so,
it's
true.
It's not going to live well.
Right.
It's going to last.
Yeah. So we've seen 2 weeks of the Vikings passing offense kind of continue its revival. Now, you know, it was the Giants, and then the Eagles clearly have a porous pass defense, which we'll get to in a second. yeah. But, you know, he's got three of Cousins' touchdowns were to his once formerly, allegedly, disgruntled wide receiver, Diggs. So, you know, see, like, things, a couple good games, things seem like they're kumbaya. Yeah, I know you've covered a bunch of Vikings games recently,
yes.
Kaylin.
Yes. I definitely agree. The beginning of the season, I mean, their offense was so run heavy. It was almost ridiculous. I don't remember the exact stats, but it was at one point, I think in their first three games, like Dalvin Cook himself as an individual was like over 50% of their total offense, which was like, whoa, what is going on here? And when I was there earlier in the season during the first three games, after week three, when they ran all over the Raiders defense, I asked, like, okay, but eventually you guys are going to encounter a defense where the run isn't as successful. Like, what's the plan? Are you going, you know, are you going to balance this out? And like, even in the beginning of the season, you could tell Thielen and Diggs were like a little frustrated, because I mean, they're one of the best receiving duos in the NFL. They're a great pair, both super talented receivers. And I think they definitely, you could tell they were frustrated a little bit, like, why are we not part of this offense? Like, why are we not being used? Because obviously there was the famous first game where Kirk Cousins attempted 10 passes. So it was like at a ridiculous level early in the season. But I think now they have found a balance, because the Bears game week four shocked them completely. They were not able to run. I mean, I think Dalvin and him had 40 yards. I think they had 40 yards rushing. And going into that game, they had 193 yards rushing. That's what they were averaging, which was obscene. It was totally obscene. So the Bears shut them down. I think that was a wake-up call. Like, all right, how do we, you know, how do we use play action? Because we have this amazing threat of a running back in Dalvin Cook, who can sort of like command almost half of a defense if he's on the field, to go, you know, swarm him on a play action situation. And I think now they are definitely using that to their advantage. At least one of Diggs' touchdowns, his three touchdowns today, was a play action situation where Cook, you know, faked the handoff, went to the other side of the field, and Diggs was open because so many of the defense had been directed towards Cook. So I think that's what makes their offense work so well, is the presence and the threat of Dalvin Cook just on the field, because he is, as coaches like to say, he's a home run threat, you know, on every play. Like, if he breaks to the second level, watch out, because he's got the ability to really, you know, score a touchdown. So you really, you can't, you can't ignore him when he's on the field. So I think that really helps their passing game. And yeah, I think today Diggs, if he's still unhappy, I mean, he needs to look long and hard deep down inside and see if he really wants to play in Minnesota or not, because that was, I feel like that's everything he wanted, is a game like today. So I think they're figuring it out as a balanced offense now.
Yeah, and the game was, you know, it was two teams that were kind of, we weren't really sure which way either one was going to go. And they shared this stat a few times on the Red Zone channel today that 63% of teams who are 4-2 yep. make the playoffs and only 36% of 3-3 teams. So we see the Vikings take a step forward, and the Eagles, really, the takeaway I had from today's game was they just don't have enough right now. You know, their receivers aren't doing enough for Wentz. Their secondary, they're in dire need of support there. And, you know, it's nothing was working for them, right? Again, they got off to a slow start. They had that botched fake field goal, which turned into an interception. But I think going into this year, I picked the Eagles to go to the Super Bowl because I thought the roster was pretty strong all across. But I think we are seeing the flaws show up in a bigger way than I thought, especially with the receivers and with the secondary. And I know there's all over Twitter, Eagles fans are calling for a Jalen Ramsey trade because they know Howie Roseman has a proclivity for making in-season trades. But they really do need secondary help. And I think for them to get back on track, it seems like they need some kind of personnel move to do so.
I totally agree. I mean, the Vikings totally exploited their secondary today. I mean, Stephon Diggs was beating, I think it was Rasul Douglas, several times. And they just had breakdowns in coverage a few times. And sort of there was finger pointing going on in the secondary as well. You know, it wasn't just like one guy getting beat. It was sort of coverage situations where was my safety help, sort of questions being asked. You could tell when they were burned for some deep plays there. So I definitely agree. I think a Jalen Ramsey trade to Philadelphia would be really exciting and probably exactly what they need. But we'll see if the Jaguars ever come around to that idea. But that would be really interesting. And another one, wasn't out there today, like Patrick Peterson
right.
and the Cardinals right. were sort of entertaining trade offers. I think I saw that.
Which seems to be a perennial headline. Yes, Patrick Peterson may be shipped elsewhere because the Cardinals are struggling.
The annual headline.
Yes. It was like Joe Thomas Peterson when he was with the Browns. The annual headline. But right, yes.
Right.
But yeah,
right.
there could
so
be.
So there's another one. Yeah. So.
Could be a couple avenues. Yeah.
Yeah. I think they definitely, they need something. I did like that fake field goal call. And I love like Doug Peterson. That's like, so, you know, his style is to be that aggressive play caller and to take those risks. And I loved the call, but you know, obviously we saw how that turned out and poor Jake Elliott.
Yeah. It's like pros and cons of being aggressive. So
right,
that, today
right.
it was a con for the Eagles. But
yeah.
So here in New York, one of the more stunning results of the day, Jets 24, Cowboys 22. Kalen, you've already written, by the time this podcast comes out, we will see the back pages. I feel as though it's likely that they are going to steal the headline that you tweeted. So I just want to say for the record, we are recording this at 8:45 p.m. on Sunday night. So if you see a back page in New York City with this headline, you should credit Kalen.
You want me to say it?
Yes.
Okay. Big reveal. Dun, dun, dun. Gang spleen.
It's pretty darn good.
Thank
pretty
you.
Darn good.
I thought of it, like I, obviously it was right when he had that 92-yard touchdown pass, well, catch and run to, who was it?
Robbie Anderson.
The name, thank you. The name's escaping me. To Robbie Anderson, I was like, wow. And I started thinking about how spleen rhymed with green. And I was like, wait, green, that's their colors. And then, to be honest, like, this is embarrassing, but I couldn't place the nickname for the Jets that had the word green in it. So I did have to Google, you know, and then I was like, oh, yeah, gang green. So then I'm like, oh, gang spleen. Yeah. And then I actually Googled again because I thought for sure it had already been used. It was way too obvious. It was just right there on the table. I'm not that witty. I'm not that clever. I'm typically a bad tweeter. You know, none of my tweets that I think are funny ever actually get attention or or, you know, anyone understands my humor. I just don't word it correctly on Twitter. I'm not an internet person as some people are. So I was like, there's no way. Someone already tweeted this like months or weeks ago when he first got mono and I'm just missing it. Turns out no. So thank you for the credit. And I look forward to seeing the New York Post back page with my headline.
Yeah, you know, big win for the Jets, right? Adam Gase's first win. And there's been a lot of angst in New York City about Gase. Is he the right guy to lead the Jets? And it's been a little unfair. He was on his third string quarterback, who's now,
so unfair.
It's always the partnership between him and Darnold. And then, you know, he could have operated the offense with Simeon, and then he gets hurt too. So I think that a lot of the criticism was a little bit unfair. Today was a triumphant return for Darnold. I'm sure it was a triumphant day for Adam Gase. And, you know, Darnold took that first hit. They were on their first, about to score the touchdown in the red zone. Darnold scrambles. He gets the back of his jersey pulled and the horse collar literally rips. And then Dallas's Collins rips the jersey. And then Van Der Esch falls on top of him. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, this is not good.
There goes the spleen.
Yeah, right. But then he just pops up. I know he's got, you know, a bunch of extra padding on. And so it seemed like he was fine. So he just pops up and then they score and everything seems fine. And as you mentioned, you know, the 92-yard touchdown right after the defense and Quinnen Williams, the top pick, made a fourth down stop and then they go and get that play immediately after. So it was a good day for the Jets to get back on track, quiet some of the noise and say, this is what we've been promising you, right? We've been promising you this partnership between Gase and Darnold. Here's what it can look like.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And I think Connor earlier this week had a good piece on saying exactly that, basically. Like, yes, okay, the playoffs are a stretch to be thinking they're going to make the postseason at this point, but there's still so much to watch for with the Jets because, you know, Sam Darnold had played one game. That's all we had seen so far from him this year. And then everything else with Luke Falk, I mean, you can't pass a judgment on any of that. That was just such an unforeseen circumstance and just truly horrible luck. And it just wasn't fair to Gase to even, you know, begin to analyze what was going on there. So I think, I think today's game was, you know, just adding on to the still small sample size of what we have now with Gase and Darnold working together. But it was very promising and I think showed a lot of their potential going forward. And Darnold looked confident. He, you know, didn't look like he had missed four games, you know, with mononucleosis. So that was great because you never know, you know, when they're out, he had only one game this season so far. So you never know what if there's going to be like a slow sort of easing in situation, but he came out firing and it was really impressive. And I think I hate the metaphor or simile, whatever we want to call it, of like the trap game. But I think for the Cowboys, like, that's exactly what this was. You know, I don't know what they thought going into this game, but I know everybody else wrote the Jets off and probably just tallied this in the win column for the Cowboys before they even got there. So I think it was kind of a trap game for the Cowboys.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of questions, you know, speaking about heat on coaches. Obviously, Jason Garrett's been on the hot seat for a few years now, and his status has always seemed to be uncertain. They opened 3-0, but looking back, you know, it's Giants, Washington, Miami. So three softer wins to open the season. And now they've regressed to 3-3. And, you know, early in the season, it was a lot of excitement. They're re-signing their core players. This is going to be a group that's going to be together for a while. And now, you know, they certainly don't look like a team that can go very far this year. And maybe they'll get back on track. But I think a game like this one, they had a chance to win late, obviously, if they score on that 2-point conversion. But, you know, I think you're right. They fell into the trap a little bit of the Jets. And I think it's going to be a really uncomfortable week in Dallas.
Definitely. And I think wasn't today's even Jerry Jones's birthday?
Oh, I don't know.
Correct. I think I saw that.
We're both Libras, I guess.
Right. Just a couple days apart there. Yeah, I think I saw that on Twitter and people were saying like, oh, Jason Garrett has such a bad loss on Jerry's birthday. Dun, dun, dun. You know, I think it's everybody who was saying he's going to get fired today, I mean, that's dramatic. I think that's a little overboard. But I definitely think his seat is a little warm down there in Dallas, just depending on what happens the rest of the season. But yeah, it's crazy. Like we had them real high in our power rankings for, you know, the very probably the first 3 weeks of the season. Like they were like, I think they may have cracked our top five at one point.
Definitely.
Yeah. And so it feels like that was a long time ago now, and we've come so far since then. But I definitely agree. I think this is going to be uncomfortable going forward down there.
All right. The last game we'll touch on before we get to the lightning round, or we'll quick hit the last five. Panthers Bucks, and I picked this one for a longer discussion, not because this was a great game, but because there's a lot of interesting conversations to be had involving the quarterback situations for both teams. The Panthers win 37-26, and now we have this situation. Kyle Allen wins his fourth straight game. You know, they start off 0-2, then he lifts the team. They're 4-2. He was 20 of 32 for two touchdowns, 227 yards, and now the question comes, well, will we see Cam Newton? When will we see Cam Newton? Seems unlikely that they will make a change while they're riding this momentum, which was the gist essentially of an NFL Network report Sunday morning. And Ron Rivera said after the game, they're not going to address it until we have to. And so I think the good part about Kyle Allen playing well is that they have plenty of time, right? They can give Newton all the time he needs to return, and they can keep mm-hmm. his health status sort of shrouded in mystery as they have to this point. They can continue to do that and take the pressure off the decision-making. I think it's some of the Kyle Allen takes, I think, have gone a little bit far. I mean, a healthy Cam Newton is going to be better than Kyle Allen, yes. I believe. We just haven't yes. seen a healthy Cam Newton in a while, but we did early last season. He was playing at a very high level, but for essentially the past year, he has been injured. So the question is, how healthy can he be? And when will that point come that you believe that he's healthy enough that his play will be better than what you're getting from Allen? And I think the reality is none of us know that exactly, because the Panthers have been very mysterious and have been keeping all of this information pretty close to the vest.
Yeah, they have been extremely quiet about that whole thing, which is par for the course when it comes to quarterback injuries and just that organization and how they've dealt with Cam and things with him in the past. But yeah, it's going to be really interesting going forward. I am fascinated with Kyle Allen personally, because I remember I'd kind of forgotten like where he had ended up until late last season when he started. I think he started one game for the Panthers last season late against the Saints, which he also won. But I kind of forgot where he ended up, because I remember when he was the top quarterback recruit coming out of high school, going to A&M, and then he ends up transferring from A&M actually at the same time that Kyler Murray ended up transferring, and he goes to Houston, and then he's benched, and then he decides to forgo the rest of his college eligibility, and he goes undrafted. And it was just a huge sort of fall for this you know, really highly touted high school quarterback recruit. And I've seen him do a couple interviews, and he just seems really like experienced in a way from that experience. Like, it seems like he's really like that fall taught him a lot, and is, I think, sort of helping him figure out his current role and taking over this Panthers team currently. So I think he's a really fascinating like character study in the league, of somebody who was like so important, and every college was after him, and then no one wanted him to become a pro quarterback, and yet here he is, and now, you know, he's sort of thriving. So I think he's a really interesting character study, but definitely agree, a healthy Cam Newton is 100 times, I don't know how many times better than Kyle Allen, but definitely better than Kyle Allen. But yeah, I think it could be a few weeks. When is the Panthers bye week?
It's next week. They're coming back from London. So I think there had been some thought that Newton would come back after the bye, but you know,
I don't think so.
It seems hard to imagine that they would take a quarterback out who's been winning games. And I think, like I said, the benefit of that is there's less pressure on Newton, and you know, if he does come back this year. But I do think there are questions to be raised about if his future continues to be in Carolina or else wear. And I think the health is really a huge part of that. And I think it would be unfair to say that it's not. Like, I that's the central issue around him. Can he stay healthy and can he be the kind of quarterback he's always been, given the fact that he's been so battered the last few years? So, yeah. And then go ahead. Yeah.
I was just going to say the other interesting part of the Panthers right now is that, I think there was a report last week based off of Kyle Allen's availability where he said Cam Newton has been in the building every day helping him, staying late and throwing with him and just really being super present with him and coaching him up and getting him ready for all the games, which, you know, doesn't sound that interesting. But as you know, starting quarterbacks are not always that helpful to their backups, especially when it's a situation like this where, you know, if Kyle Allen plays really well, it could in the future threaten Cam's job. So I thought it was really interesting to hear that he has been very hands-on with him and very just a perfect teammate with him. And especially considering like this unfair narrative that's always followed Cam throughout his career, that he's this selfish teammate, you know, that, you know, the media and fans have like always kind of used the word selfish with Cam, and it's always been unfounded and unfair. But I think that little detail of him being a good teammate to Kyle and helping him prepare for these games, I think really shows a lot about him and about that situation right now.
And also in that game, on the other side, 6 turnovers by Jameis Winston, 5 interceptions, 2 fumbles, one of which he lost. He'll be an unrestricted free agent at the end of the year. This was the one to see if Arians could get anything out of him. And you see some positive steps, and then you have a game like this, and it's just a reminder that 4.5 years into his career, you know, coaches are still trying to tap into his ceiling. And I think that says a lot about the fact that, he's an unrestricted free agent, and I think this experiment is probably nearing its end, at least in Tampa Bay.
Definitely, I would be shocked if they extended him after this season. I definitely think he's done there. And I think at this point, I'm sure he'll land somewhere else, but it's really frustrating. Obviously, I'm sure Bruce Arians is super frustrated because I do think he took that job thinking that he could cure all of this and that, you know, his coaching could be the answer because of his history with working with quarterbacks in the past and, you know, the type of offense that he runs. So I think for him, like, I'm sure he's probably very frustrated with this. And yeah, I agree. I mean, the first snap of the game was an interception for Jameis. So, and then it just accumulated from there today. And he has these games. It's not that rare anymore for him to be having these like 4 or 5 interception games. Like in his career, it's happened several times. So it's not just like a one-off. Oh, he had this horrible, horrible day. He's had a horrible, horrible day several times in his career. So I think it's just, I don't know what the answer is, but I do think it's not going to continue in Tampa Bay after this season.
All right, time for the lightning round. Gary and Andy always branded this as the lightning-ish round because they weren't actually fast answers. I think we'll give it a go. We'll try to make it snappier than the other ones. I think we can do it.
We can do it.
We've got 5 more games to cover. And playing off our last topic, we will start with Titans-Broncos, where Marcus Mariota is benched for Ryan Tannehill. The struggles of the 15 quarterback class continue, Kalen.
Yeah, that's my class, so these guys need to represent us a little bit better. Class of 15. I heard like earlier this summer that the Titans scouting staff was like seriously looking into quarterbacks of this upcoming draft class. So, I mean, that's not really a surprise to anybody, but it was just kind of actual evidence that this is kind of at the front of their minds. Do we want Marcus long-term or not? What are we going to do at the end of this season or even, you know, if he would get a mid-season extension or a late season. So I think that's just evidence of they're still figuring that out. And that was earlier this summer before, you know, he was benched today, which I think was sort of a brutal kind of sign of their confidence in him right now, which is not very high.
Definitely. Mariota also unrestricted free agent after this year. And it's when I was doing a recent story about the Dolphins and their long-term plan, someone said to me, you can't even be sure that a number one draft pick is right. going to be your answer. He said, look at the 2015 draft. You have Winston and Mariota go 1 and 2, and still 5 years in, we still don't know we what don't either know. Quarterback is. So I think that's a great reminder of the fact that this is such a, that is the hardest riddle to crack in professional sports. And those two really exemplify it. And on the flip side, we'll just say, hey, good win for the Broncos, you know? They had a nice win against the Chargers last week, second straight win. Good day for Vic Fangio's defense.
Yeah, I think his defense, we were just waiting for it to look like a Vic Fangio defense at the beginning of the season. And you could tell their pass rush was close to like getting home on these quarterbacks, like in their early games. And they just like couldn't get there. And then Bradley Chubb goes down with the ACL. And then it seemed like, oh man, that's really a brutal hit for that defense. Like he was probably their best hope at, you know, having a good pass rush with Von Miller, obviously. But they've been able to figure it out without Chubb. And I think it was just, you know, just getting used to it. And they were going to break and they were going to break home to that quarterback and get those sacks eventually. So that was good to see it actually resembling like what we know Vic Fangio can do based off of his incredible defenses in Chicago over the last few years.
Moving to Miami, where we had our winless bowl. Connor Orr was there, and he will have more on that this week. So we will leave the analysis mostly of that game to him. But clearly a loss for Miami, but probably a long-term win when the two-point conversion bounces off the hands of Kenyon Drake. You wonder, was there anybody who was glad about that, right? Okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we know what it is, right? So, but the players on the field, the coaching staff, they want the win. They want to get a first win for Brian Flores. Players want to see the results of their hard work. They want some kind of positive feedback loop, which they have not yet had. But ultimately, a long-term win probably for the Dolphins.
Yeah, definitely. And you just had that great story on tanking strategy and does it work? Is it successful? Kind of just the ins and outs of analyzing this well-known strategy in sports. So if you guys haven't read that, you should go to our website and read it. It will help you inform how you should feel about the Miami Dolphins and what they're doing this season. But I think it was definitely a long-term win for them. And I kind of, you know, when it bounced off his hands, it was just a very fitting end because you really thought, oh, wow, they're going to do it. That's great. You know, they can have this one victory and that'll help build the team morale and just help them sort of bond and just keep going this season. It's already been a long year, but it's going to be even a longer year for them. And then, you know, you see the pass, the football just drop to the ground. And it was a good metaphor for what's going on there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. All right. Ravens 23, Bengals 17. Lamar Jackson, the first player in the Super Bowl era to pass for 200 plus yards and rush for 150 plus. His reaction after the game was, it's cool, I guess. I'm trying to win. I think he's one of the easiest people in this game to root for just from his draft day slide and the way he handled that and how fun the offense is to watch. And the way he picked that cameraman up that he ran into afterward and checked on her after the game. Just really a lot of things to like about Lamar Jackson, both on and off the field.
Yeah, 100%. He's one of the more quieter and soft-spoken players. Man of few words in his interviews, but very easy to root for, especially because, you know, there was the whole thing of teams wanting him to switch positions in the draft process. And we can see now that would have been a huge loss of talent and skill and just so much potential there. And I go through this debate. I have Lamar Jackson and Patrick Mahomes in one fantasy league. And I go through a debate weekly, like who should I start? Because they're both so reliable and so talented to really help you win, you know, your league. And so, yeah, he's really easy to root for. And I'm excited to see, you know, where the Ravens end up this season, because, you know, they've pretty much got a hold of that division. So,
yeah,
at least for now.
And flip side, Bengals 0-6 for the first time since 2008. So
yeah,
not a good start for Zach Taylor so far. But not great. They've got a lot of work to do on that roster, I think, and the offensive line in particular.
Yeah, I think they have one of the like least talented rosters, besides the Dolphins probably, in the league. And I think it's just hard for them to do what they want to do there without, you know, increasing the talent, which is really not their fault since they're in their first year. And you can only do so much when your new coach is coming into a new team with your roster. So I think they'll improve.
Kind of a lackluster game. Saints 13-6 over Jacksonville. Saints are 5-1. Teddy Bridgewater still undefeated, but really an excellent day by the Saints defense, which has given up fewer than 300 yards for three straight games.
Yeah, that was sort of a boring matchup there. But, Teddy Bridgewater doing great in relief duty, which I think is not really surprising, but we just hadn't seen much of him since his Vikings days. So it's kind of fun to see a quarterback who was a starter in the league, who went through that horrendous injury and the comeback, and nobody was sure if he was going to be able to, you know, play again, coming back to this level. So I think it's always fun to see that kind of comeback pay off. And their defense was great. I think Gardner Minshew, I read from NFL Next Gen Stats that he had tied for the most attempts without a completion in a game this season. And Marshawn Lattimore was great in that game, the Saints cornerback, when he was defending the throws. I think Minshew's percentage was even further down from there. So he had a really big impact on the Jaguars offense for sure.
Yeah. Speaking of corners, also weird that Shad Khan, the Jaguars owner, said he expected Jalen Ramsey to play, and then Ramsey missed his third game since asking to be traded. He's out with a back injury, only further fueling the desires of Eagles fans for a new cornerback.
Absolutely. Yeah, that situation, I can't wait to see where this ends up, because it's just like, I don't know, it's just like two sides like completely unwilling to like engage with the other one. And I don't know who's gonna win, but it's, if Jalen is not gonna play for them, I don't know what their plan is, you know? Like, if he's not gonna play for them, if I was in charge, it's like, if you're not gonna play for me, then I don't want you either. So it's going to be really interesting to see where this ends up.
Yeah. Last game we have Cardinals, Falcons. It ended up as a 1-point game. Cardinals win 34-33. The Falcons are such a curiosity to me. They are now 1-5.
Out.
Yeah. 1-5 for the first time since 2007. Obviously, people will focus on Matt Bryant misses the extra point that would have tied the game. But let's be honest, much bigger problems here.
It's never the kicker's fault.
Last week, they gave up 592 yards of offense to Watson and the Texans. And okay, you can say Watson and the Texans are tremendous right now. But, you know, this week they gave up 442 yards of total offense against a rookie quarterback, Kyler Murray, rookie head coach, Cliff Kingsbury. The problem for Dan Quinn, who I think is a very good coach. However, he made all the coordinator changes after last season, and he has taken on the defensive coordinator duties this season. So when the defense fails in the way that it has been failing, it all comes back on mm-hmm. him. And I think that it seems at this point, if things continue on this path, the finger's going to continue to be pointed at Dan Quinn. I don't know how you think this is going to resolve, Kalen, but I think it was a really tough day for the defense, and it's hard to, I thought they were going to go pretty deep in the playoffs. I thought they'd win the division, but I was another pick that I was way off on.
That seemed to be like the popular opinion with the Falcons. So yeah. at least you're not alone
yeah.
in that one.
Yeah.
I do think from like a coaching strategy point, for a head coach, like, you never want to be in charge of a unit in the way that Dan Quinn is in charge of the defense, because now, you know, that defense, it's struggling. It's on, like you said, it's on him. And I think Arthur Blank, the Falcons owner, is not particularly patient in his past experience. So I think, you know, if they continue on to lose the way that they have been, I wouldn't be surprised if he were to make a change at the end of this season, just based off of his personality and what he's been like as an owner.
And I think it's, you know, it is unfair. They've had injuries on defense that have really ravaged the unit. Keanu Neal is supposed to be a huge mm-hmm. linchpin. And so you do understand that there are ways in which the defense was supposed to work that they don't, that they were relying on, right? But unfortunately, he's a defensive head coach and he took the play calling to hopefully get the unit back on track. And to this right. point, the results haven't borne that out. So,
right. Right. And then you see a team like the Colts last week who had kind of similar key players out with injury in their defense, and their scheme works. They can figure it out with other players on there, and they can beat a team like the Chiefs. So doesn't make them look that good, the Falcons. So,
well, thanks for joining me this week, Kalen. It was fun recapping the week 6 games for you. Or with you, excuse me.
Thanks for having me, JV.
Well, you know, we're both just squatting here for Gary yeah. and Andy, who are the real goats of the podcast. So hopefully our listeners are not too disappointed by us.
Exactly. We did our best in our debuts.
We did our best. The MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast is me, Jenny Rentis, and Kalen Kaler. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer of podcast is Scott Brody. Ben Eagle is director of editorial projects and product. Mark Moravik is emeritus editor of the MMQB. Andy Benoit is the founder of the MMQB NFL Podcast. Keep up with our entire lineup of podcasts 5 days a week by subscribing to the MMQB NFL Podcast for free on Apple Podcasts. And while you're there, please do us a favor and leave a rating and review. It really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, Radio.com, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.